I'm Mike Hebert, owner of Cantex Roofing and Construction. Every day is game day, and we'll get it right when it comes to your roofing, construction, windows, and mirrors. Call Cantex Roofing and Construction today. Together, we are one serving you.
The podcast put together with Red Raider fans in mind. This is the Tech Talk Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
It's Tech Talk here on Double T 97.3, DoubleT973.com. Clint Scott, Dr. Mike Gustafson, Ben Poorman behind the glass. You can hit us up on the Yates Flooring Center chat line. Thoughts, comments, commercial spokesman that you enjoyed. Seen some of those stack up. We'll get to some of those. Gus, you remember about a month ago, I think I just said member. Midwest coming out. Remember? Do you remember? About a month ago, we discussed the term bed rotting that we both enjoyed, which was basically saying you are, you know, being lazy and I'm sleeping on the couch all day on my off day. And then one that you didn't like as much, but I liked even more, Hercule Dirkling, which was the Scottish term for also staying in bed when it is time to get up. You know, oh, I was just Hercule Dirkling, so that's why I was late to work today. I have another one for you that I learned. This one I don't think is as funny of a term, but I'm just trying to keep up with the trends, trying to keep us hip and happening here, Gus. It is sunshine guilt, and it's most prevalent right now where it's early spring when you're starting to have nice days of weather and it's sunny. And essentially all it means, pretty simple, you have sunshine guilt. You feel guilt because you didn't make use of a beautiful day. So, don't feed into it.
That's
go out to baseball games.
Yeah, that and this is the time of year for that. I always thought the Pope. Yeah, no doubt. Transplant some trees. I always thought the post spring break, you know, you'll get into this stretch right in here where it's, you know, you may have an iffy weather deal, or I mean, not a big deal, but then you'll have that one where it's like shorts and a t-shirt, like hey, let's have some of the fellas over, hang out in the backyard, that kind of deal.
Have some brewskis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fire up the grill,
and then you know, you may have a chilly weekend, and then whatever, back and forth, you know, a little bit over this last little stretch. But yeah, this is all, and I've always said too that this is a part of the school year that goes quick. I think this would be the point where I'd be, you know, I'd be knee deep in you know, baseball season and stuff. You kind of go, nah, I don't have that end of semester angst yet. And then you jack around for about three more weeks and go, oh crap, that paper's due in 10 days. And oh, this project's due, and you know, and then school comes crushing down right there at the end of April, early May.
I think even like not being involved with the teams, but if you're going off of the sports calendar, I still think that rings true, because man, like track and field for high school, well, I guess, and on the college side, on the outdoor season, I mean, you got your couple weeks away from now already your last regular season meet, and those seasons, just if you live your life like a lot of sports fans do, which is your calendar, you're gauging it not off of the months but off of the sporting season, whether it's football, you know, if you're an MLB fan, you have the longest calendar to me. Part of that is you're in a bulk of the summer where it is just you, which is nice. So you can really just focus in, on your team. But like, if you were just, you know, going off of basketball to track and baseball, like, man, that track and baseball calendar flies by.
Yeah.
As far as like high school and, even some on the college side, of course, college goes a little bit deeper, and we're hoping for a Omaha run.
Sure.
Speaking of college baseball, there you go. Transition. Who do you trust out of the bullpen the most right now?
Well, Josh Sanders is the easy answer to that. Mm-hmm. The version that we got of Jacob Rogers the other day and Parker Hutera. Oof. You know, I mentioned this yesterday, and it hadn't really dawned on me until I had when he came in and we're digging through the stats, and you know, I'm kind of doing my little, you know, 8 appearances, eight out of the pen, you know, 2-0 mm-hmm. the record, one save, you know, just kind of rattling off those sorts of stats. Parrish, and again, Parrish sort of gets dinged by everybody. Mm-hmm. Just at this moment, there's probably a lot of fans, you know, that moan and groan about it. Like, his very first outing, he gave up a run in an inning against Oregon or somebody, mm-hmm. and then a couple of zeros, and then the four runs against Texas in the Sunday game to lose that game. And he took the loss in that game, like four runs in an inning and a third or whatever. And then it's been 0-0-0 since. And so you just look down his page, and he's been scored upon twice in his whatever seven or eight outings. It's not a bad, like, that number right there is better than you might look at it and you go, oh, 5.22 ERA or something. Yeah, like, hey, now, again, we could all done without the loss in that situation. I'm just saying, like, his numbers are better than my impression of him has been. And but yeah, I'm Rogers and Hutera and Sanders, Parrish. I mean, that all that group, and you know, Free might have been the best of all of them until the last two or three outings.
And that's what, you know, talking yesterday, that's kind of what that question stemmed from, because Ryan Free, if you would have asked this question, you know, 2 weeks ago, it felt like he would have been the leader or a name that, you know, rolled out of your mouth pretty early.
Because he zipped right along against Texas. I mean, you know, he was buzzing through that. Like, he wouldn't scored on his first four or five outings, I don't think. Maybe Texas Southern got a run off of him in a couple of innings. You know, just if you're going to give up runs, that's when you want to give them up, right? On a day where you scored 14, coming in to get a couple of innings of work, give up a run, okay, no big deal. But, and then there's countless examples of guys that go sort of hit a lull in the middle somewhere and then pick it back up. And so I'm not giving up on that dude either. But
No, I don't think you should. I just think, because, like, to me, you know, a name you threw out there who I, you know, have personally been surprised by, and I don't know if you have been, but, like, Hutera, having him on that list has been a big surprise to me, and a pleasant surprise too.
You know, he and Hewer are kind of similar. Now Max had a couple of iffy outings here recently, but I don't think there's any sign of problems or anything. But just he and Hewer are both guys that, you know, get their sign and then throw it with conviction, which is something, you know, baseball people talk about in terms of, you know, not dabbling around or whatever. It's like, get it, yep, go, boom. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm trying to execute. And, you know, most of the time when somebody says they're throwing with some conviction, they're probably throwing a lot of strikes, probably challenging a lot of hitters. You know, here's a 1-0 pitch, and it's, I'm not trying to trick you with a little this or that. I'm going right at you. You know, fastballs and fastball counts and stuff. Not all the time, but then Hewer's gotten bit by that a couple times because he's pitched behind a little bit in the last 2 weeks and given up three big home runs that have gotten him beat. But, you know, Hutera can spin it, and, you know, there's enough fastball. He'll be an interesting guy going forward. I hope he carries this year out and has a big freshman year. I wouldn't be one bit surprised if he's a weekend guy next year, like a rotation guy, not just pitching out of the pen. Yeah. I think he's that good.
It's every Red Raider's favorite podcast. This is the Tech Talk Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Tech Talk, you've got us on Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3.com. Two more hours with us as we take you all the way up to 6 o'clock. Appreciate you joining us on a Wednesday. Clint Scott, Dr. Mike Gustafson, Ben Poorman behind the glass. We're live from the First United Bank studio. You can call us on the Visual Edge IT hotline, 806-771-0973. Or you can hit us up on the Yates Flooring Center chat line. Thoughts, comments, questions, dog pictures, all that welcome there. Take us anywhere with the mobile app. That's brought to you by Happy State Bank. We're also streaming live on Fox 34 News Now and on YouTube. We had a couple things to round out.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing before we get to that, because it's in the same vein, Jace Young, He was assigned to AAA. He's making an interesting move this year.
A Toledo Mud Hen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so our man Rick Gilbert gets to go see him this summer.
That's right.
Yeah, because that's Rick's hometown, and he talks about going to Mud Hen games. And he was sort of calling for this. Like, I think I'm going to get to see Jace this summer in AAA mm-hmm. and Toledo, and there it is. So, yeah, but the other move that you're talking about is him going from second to third.
Yeah.
And he played it. He did some third here in 2020, which was a COVID year. It didn't really play out. And he wasn't great at it. Way better in the middle of the infield. But the move happened this year, and probably a little more time to work on it and really, approach it as a professional. And there was a defensive highlight of him the other day playing a slow roller and throwing a dude out. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, for him, the battle will be the deal. The old classic. You'll find a place for him to stand.
And that's my question. Is this a move because, hey, we think – we have a need for third base, or it could suit you for third base, and we think you could do a little bit better there? Or is this is going to get you called up faster if you're over here?
Yeah, it could be. It's probably talking about the need. One thing to know that a couple years ago when they banned the shift in Major League Baseball, what that did, one of the things that they were hoping for was, maybe a byproduct that they were hoping for was to get more, by taking away the shift, they probably took some of the sluggers out of the game because they would just be able to shift it and stack the infield with four sluggers and range and all that kind of stuff. And the athleticism wasn't, paramount for a second baseman because the guys were, they're all shifted into position. Well, now that they've got some of the rules governing their positioning, you're seeing a little bit more like, hey, you got to get a little more athletic up the middle at mm-hmm. shortstop and second base. And this was probably somewhat predictable even when Jace was drafted, but all along they were drafting the hitter, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, if Jace goes out and hits 35, 40 pumps a year, then he'll stand at first base if he has mm-hmm. to. But, the bat's going to dictate that. But he's got infield skills and those type things. And so I think taking the shift out of it probably hurt him a bit. And they did flip some positioning of some of their higher draft guys to get more athleticism in the middle. And then Jace moved from being sort of that slug type second base body mm-hmm. to really a prototypical third base body. He just hadn't played there as much like mm-hmm. his brother had. His brother was lake ready from the minute he walked onto campus here. Like, man, that guy handles third base. Like, a lot of times you'd see guys play it well, but they were really good shortstop skills that moved over to third, and they would handle it. But, angles and some of those things were a little bit different, mm-hmm. and they'd make quick transitions. Josh looked like a third baseman, gobbled up the position from the first day he was on campus, probably was great at it in high school. I don't even know, but he embraced it, whereas, Jace may have pushed back a little bit early on. But this year he spent all of his – I think he spent a lot of time here. This winter. Yeah, I mean, I know he spent a lot of time here, but I think he spent a lot of time working at third base.
He wasn't just like hanging out. Just like,
no. And I think,
go get some barbecue.
I think part of his
days while I'm here.
First of all, he lived here. So, yeah. So, wherever he was, he spent time working at third base on the defensive side of it. And so that'll be a big deal for him. But yeah, him getting AAA. And again, I think that puts John McMillan, and I can't remember what I said in here versus what I said on the broadcast yesterday, because I know I said this on the broadcast, so mm-hmm. pardon me if I'm repeating myself, but Davis Martin and John McMillan also assigned to AAA in the last, in the last week or two. But the good news there was, and this popped this morning. I got it on the Gus hotline last night, but Parker Mashinsky made the mm-hmm. Astros opening day roster. He's going to break camp with them, and he had to pitch well to do it because they had like four guys for two spots, which is usually the case for most teams. But Parker unscored upon in spring training, and it probably came down to an outing on Wednesday, on Monday night. They were playing their kind of these little scrimmages they're all doing, and they were playing their AAA team, and the dude that was competing with him for the job went like two thirds of an inning and left with the bases loaded, and Parker came in and like punched out a guy to get out of the mess, and then threw a scoreless inning. So it's basically you and I are competing for a job, and you left a mess, and I cleaned up your mess. You go to AAA, I'm going to the big leagues. And so,
seems like you did that on purpose.
Yeah,
but, he's probably fair.
And Parker's got options left, which means they can still send him up and down this year. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do that forever to a player because eventually they have to clear waivers and do some different things. But he's got a year of options left, so he may if they get in a pinch or if he gives up, you know, isn't sharp right off the bat, he can be up and down again three or four times this year. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but it's not out of the question. And that same thing could very well happen with Beeter. Again, hope Clayton Beeter goes out and lights it up, and he's the last guy they would want to send down, but it could happen for those young guys. That actually could happen to Josh, but I think, you know, starting in the All-Star game kind of takes care of that. But if he were to have a disastrous start, you know, just 6 weeks of awful baseball, they could option him, you know, and mm-hmm. still be okay, as opposed to an established big leaguer where, like, if Verlander was just brutal, you can't just send him down to AAA.
So what you're saying, if to start the season, if Josh basically, like the baseball version of Space Jam, had his talent stolen by the Monstars of baseball.
I was exactly thinking that. You read my mind, dude, again.
He can't feel anymore when he does throw it. It either goes to the crowd or to the mound, and there's no in between. Tech Talk on Double T 97.3. Gus, I'm glad we're on the same wavelength, you and I.
Yes.
Yeah. What am I thinking right now? What number?
69.
You're right. It's Tech Talk on Double T
97.3. The podcast put together with Red Raider fans in mind. This is the Tech Talk podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
It is Tech Talk here on Double T 97.3 and DoubleT973.com. Clint Scott, Dr. Mike Gustafson, Ben Poorman behind the glass taking care of us, keeping us up on the Yates Flooring Center chat line. Or you can call us on the Visual Edge IT hotline. That number is open, 806-771-0973. I love, and granted this is before my time, but just for the history of basketball, I love the storyline of their careers and then just how different they were too, and that they were intertwined early and then were two defining players of, you know, a decade and a half of NBA basketball after that. And then like went on from, you know, hey, Magic gets the best of him in college, but it wouldn't be the last shot for Larry.
Sure.
They would, you know, enhance to NBA organizations that were rivals and really made them, you know, not single-handedly because those teams were loaded, but, you know, were certainly the faces of those organizations to make that what the rivalry was and what it grew to be. And still, you know, if you think of NBA rivalries, which, you know, they're just not as prominent as NFL rivalries or, you know, even some rivalries with the major leagues. But if you were to say basketball rivals, even though things are a little bit different now in the NBA, that is still one that's there. And again, the organization-to-organization hate, I think, is least prominent in the game of basketball on the NBA level.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's friends with everybody there. And I'm not saying we need to get back to a point of, you know, starting fistfights and like Lambeer clotheslines or anything like that. But I think one of the knocks that is totally valid of the game of professional basketball is you do not have rivalries like that. You just don't have anything. And so it's not the only thing that, you know, you can find a fault with in the NBA if you are someone who does not like it, or someone like me that doesn't hate it but has just fallen away from it and just, you know, doesn't have a high care percentage. There's several things, but that for me, that's one thing. It's just you just don't have, you know, we talk about sports hate. We did the Suck It Steve.
Right.
That's not there in the NBA.
No.
But that was completely different. And, you know, of course, you had, like, Bulls Pistons.
Oh, I was just...
Just gone. Those aren't there.
I was about to echo, you know, sort of spotlight that in terms of your conversation. For somebody my age, the you know, the Sixers, the Sixers-Celtics of the very early 80s, basically right after Bird got there, because that was Bird versus Dr. J and, mm-hmm. you know, really good games. And then Bird and Magic for the better part of the 80s. And then MJ comes in the mid-80s, but his teams aren't that good, and it's you know, but it's the Pistons that sort of unseat the aging Celtics and, you know, do so with all the things you're talking about. Just everybody hated those dudes. Mm-hmm. And it's good. I think it's 30 for 30. And I say it's a, because there's so many good HBO's doing good ones, Showtime's doing good ones. So I can't remember exactly which one, but the one on those Pistons teams is really good. But whatever it is, whatever the documentary is, but yeah, they were so easy to hate, and they bullied MJ and those guys around, and MJ talked about like that was when he really got into weights and conditioning and all that, because he was like, I've got to be more physical to play against those dudes and to beat those dudes, and. You know, and in responding to – and their run, the Pistons' run wasn't this thing that was a 7 or 8 or 10 year deal. It was like 2 or 3 years that they were really – maybe 3 or 4 where they were really on the cusp and had all their parts and all that stuff. You know, peak Isaiah Thomas, and he was sort of polarizing. Lambeer, my God, you know, just how dirty he was. I mean, Lambeer's – what's his name from Texas? Cunningham. I mean, it's that kind of deal, except Cunningham didn't, I don't know.
He doesn't have any NBA championship level production to back it up.
He didn't have the chops to do all that crap. But anyway, it's that kind of that same, if for someone who wasn't around back then or wasn't paying attention, like to put the, you know, how the venom is around here for him and them, specifically on that one night, but more so just him, that was Lambeer, man. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of hated everywhere, and it was the same act all the time, and all, you know, week after week after week. But yeah, and then you
he
got
was like
into
a
the,
good like WWE heel,
yep.
where you,
yeah.
you knew you were there, even if that was your first NBA game, you could tell from the crowd's reaction, oh, I'm not supposed to like this guy, and then you learned why you didn't like that
right?
guy
Absolutely.
If he was going up against your team.
Absolutely, and I think for me, I mean, and then certainly MJ, the three, then the 2 years off, and then he comes back, wins three more, but and because around that time, I mean, the basketball was as good as ever. But I think for me, one of the things that sort of, I hadn't paid much attention to the NBA for a decent stretch through the aughts. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I just remember feeling sort of icky, and it's their right to do this, but, you know, sort of orchestrating the free agency, you know, and that was when LeBron went to Miami, you know, when he went to Heat and it was like, hey, let's, you know, like they had sort of set the thing up, like, let's go make a great team here. And the NBA allows it. I don't mean the NBA as a league allows it, but just basketball allows you. You can get 2 or 3 great players in one place, and you can change the game. And they did. But it just felt so contrived in a way that, like, man, we didn't watch that team grow organically and put pieces together over 2 or 3 years. And I was just like, hey, you want to go there? And then, you know, 2 or 3 years, you're up against the cap, and then it falls apart. And it just for me, that was where it sort of fell apart. But – I mean, I was never a basketball first guy, but that whole 20-year stretch of NBA that you're talking about, late 70s, late 90s, was, you know, there was a whole lot of me watching those Sunday afternoon games for sure.
Well, excuse me. I mean, I think you, even with like in Kobe Bryant's era, you had still some of that to what I see team to team, organization to organization competitiveness that's just not there anymore. It's tech talk.
The podcast that finishes your workday in a very Red Raider way. This is the Tech Talk Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Happy Wednesday. I'm Scott, Dr. Mike Gustafson, Ben Porman behind the glass. It is a Viking Gust arrives, John Bon Jovi edition of Tech Talk today. We're live from the First United Bank Studio. You can call us on the Visual Edge IT hotline. That number is 806-771-0973. Or you can hit us up on the Yates Flooring Center chat line. Thoughts, comments, questions, reactions, all of that. Welcome there. You can take us anywhere with the mobile app. You can also comment from that mobile app on the 8th Flooring Center chat line. The Double T 97.3 mobile app is brought to you by Happy State Bank. We're also streaming live on Fox 34 News Now and on YouTube. If you were watching a couple weeks ago, pre-Baylor series, you saw Dr. Mike Gustafson do the Charleston. Still haven't gotten to do it again.
So I need to clean that up. Yeah.
You've had 2 weeks of practice, right? That's all you've been doing in your off time? So you're ready to, we say Friday, you debut the new and improved Charleston? Show us all the steps you've practiced? Maybe wear like a black leotard or something, really get into it?
Mm-hmm.
And with the jazz hands?
If you plan on that, yeah.
Writing it in the show.
Put it in there.
All right, Tech Talk, Friday, 3:30. Gus's dance routine.
4:45.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm going to do it. Friday at 4:45. All right, okay. I'll do that. Mark it down. Everybody tune in.
I will knock baseball off the airwaves and bring that in. You joke. I will find a way. So UCF, you're talking about Rich Wallace. It is year one for him with the program over there. And if you're UCF, if you're any of the coaches really trying to make your mark that's coming in to the Big 12, and I say that because I don't know if there's any weird UCF sport, like you know, Big 12 wrestling has what, like North Dakota State over here, and there's like Alabama rowing or something like
right,
that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
All the Big 12 sports for UCF, you know, you have a real, real great boom or bust kind of couple of seasons ahead of you, right? Because now you do have a step up in recruiting than what you had, another tool to say, hey, you're going to a power conference.
And you're talking about UCF.
And it's not, I know it's not the SEC and it's not the Big Ten, and now suddenly you're finding layers still with how you use this, but still it's better than where you were. And as rapidly as just, as a whole, as that university has shot up athletically, this is another one in the arsenal. And for baseball, like for Rich Wallace, this is where you're in year one of a program, much better conference that you're playing in. And then, as you mentioned, and this is something, you know, you have to be drooling over if you're Gus Malzahn too, where you're in a state with a bunch of athletes that are really, really good. And suddenly, where maybe there was a gap to, you know, Florida State, Florida, and Miami, I'm not saying it's all the way closed, but you're seeing them, and you can go to football for this, starting to win some of those recruiting battles on in-state kids. And I think of the teams that you brought in, and I would totally listen to an argument for BYU, and this is just this round of four. This is pre-Arizona, Colorado, or the Arizonas, Colorado, and Utah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think UCF was the most dangerous school that you brought in, because I don't know what the ceiling is over there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I agree.
And part of that is the surplus of talent. If they can get them all there and develop them, and you could have in 5 years from now, assuming college sports hasn't just blown up from how we know it, I mean, you could have a legit problem with UCF in the conference.
And it feels like, I agree, and it feels like the whereas contrast that maybe with Houston, they've done really good things in their history.
Mm-hmm.
Periodic national championship level runs, maybe another one here. We're going to find out this weekend. But, you know, you go back to the Faisalama, Jama Akeem, and Drexler and that, mm-hmm, that bunch in the early 80s and then early mid 80s and then this one right here. And so the ceiling for their basketball program is pretty high, but they've been up and down through that. They're not North Carolina or Duke or, you know.
It's been Samson bringing them back.
Sure, absolutely.
Because of what, they've already made a Final Four on that, mm-hmm, Quentin Grimes team 3 years ago. You've been a highly ranked team over the past 3 or 4 years. I think this is the best one he's had, mm-hmm, from top to bottom if they – you know, can get the consistency side out of it, but.
And it feels like the football, I mean, you have to go back to the late 70s where the football program peaked at that level. They were early adopters of the run and shoot and slinging it all over, and so they got a Heisman out of that, mm-hmm, before, you know, quarterbacks that threw it on every play were dismissed as Heisman candidates.
Yeah.
editorial comment there, but I don't, and they were a BCS type team a few years ago under Dana, but as soon as they got in the league, that shifted, and so it feels like their ceiling maybe a little bit lower in football. But all of that to say, at least with regard to our familiarity with Houston, because we shared a conference with them and shared a state with them for a long time, it feels like we're a little more aware of their ceiling than we are UCF's. Mm-hmm. Like UCF's a bit of a wild card.
And for Houston, it's to me one sport, right? Like you knew basketball was gonna knock the doors down and lead that conversation. I still didn't expect them to win the conference, but I thought that they would compete, and lo and behold, they do win the conference and they get a one seed. But like football, they're having to start over in year two in the Big 12 with Willie Fritz. Baseball, not really expecting much there. But UCF, I thought the one that would struggle, and they don't make the tournament, but I thought the sport that would struggle from the Big Three would be basketball, and Johnny Dawkins' squad hung with everybody.
And he got extended today.
Yeah.
He got a contract extension. I've got it in my notes from the show that we did. I know it was preseason. It might have been pre-conference play. I don't exactly remember the timing on it, but that we had talked about who would, because you asked Dickens and I questions, and it was the coach most likely to be let go at the end of the season, and Dawkins was at the top of the list because I remember part of my reasoning was that he was 6 or 7 years in, and it kind of felt like they are what they are. And they're going to get antsy.
I thought they were going to get beat up year one of the Big 12, too. I thought it was going to be like a 3 or 4 win team in conference play.
And then we saw them play, and you're like, hey, they got a little more in the tank than we probably gave them credit for.
I mean, the biggest compliment I can give to them, because still obviously missing on the tournament, but they looked like a legitimate Big 12 basketball program.
There's a couple dudes on that roster. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that about Cincinnati, too. You know,
We
watched in the NIT last night and go, hey, a couple of those guys I'll take, too.
Well, that was a good game last night against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Indiana State. Yeah, they didn't look like the leftovers of the conference. Like teams that next year, if it's anything like this year, they're going to be a handful. It's Tech Talk on Double T 97.3.
It's every Red Raider's favorite podcast. This is the Tech Talk Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Headlines, it is The Juice here on Tech Talk. You've got us on Double T 97.3 and Double T 97.3, Red Raider Baseball. They're coming off a 16-4 run rule win in the 8th inning over Stephen F. Austin. The Lumberjacks on a 22-game losing streak after coming here. I mean, woof.
Yeah, they're struggling.
Mm. And, you know, I know it was just a snapshot view from watching them yesterday, but it seemed like they had some nice pieces, at least in the hitting lineup, and maybe your outing had more to do with that, and they didn't take advantage of runners in scoring position. But, like I said, it felt like they hit 87 doubles yesterday, and what their leadoff dude had about 10 of those is what it felt like.
Yeah, they struggle on the mound, and we saw a couple of their better options too. I mean, of course, just for an inning at a time, but yeah, that's not a good club.
And that's not me looking at them going, I can't believe they don't have a winning record.
No.
It's more of how have you lost 21?
No, that's tough, dude.
That's incredible.
That's miserable.
Oh man,
tough deal.
You saw 11 arms from the Fighting F. Austins yesterday. Your arm that picked up the win, Trendon Parrish. He came in relief effort and
he
had a great
outstanding. Yeah, he was fantastic.
Of course, they are en route. Well, I would guess maybe have landed by now. I'm not sure what the itinerary was today. Against the team that we've been talking about today, UCF.
Yeah, they'll be on the field. They'll usually go straight from the airport, hotel, and then about a 45-minute turnaround at the hotel, and then they're on the bus headed over to the ballpark for BP and just to go play everything. You want to go find the nooks and crannies in the outfield wall, do all the things, get ground balls, play the sun fields, whatever.
I wonder if you attack it this year, like, hey, where would be a great spot to hide an Easter egg? We need to make sure to note those, and that way we're ready for them, prepared. You doing an Easter egg hunt? Running around with a little basket?
No.
Looking for little blue and green
don't
and pink
eggs?
Don't
have any little bambinos at the house, huh?
Little bunny ears for Gus running around the yard, hopping on the bunny trail? Okay. This week marks the 40th Texas Relays. Wes Kitley will coach in, of course, going back to his time just down the road at ACU, to now leading an outstanding Red Raider track and field program. This will be the first everyone's involved track meet. You've had two outdoor meets so far, one over at the Wes Kitley Invitational at ACU, and then you just wrapped up the Masked Rider Open here in Lubbock last weekend. Now is the big one. Of course, a lot of tradition there at the Texas Relays. It's a highly touted event, and you will pretty much see everybody in action that was, you know, maybe taking a couple events off after a deep indoor and successful indoor track and field season. So looking forward to that. That'll start tomorrow.
Yep, challenging field, an opportunity to get qualified. They start working their way back through that same process that they did in the indoor.
Softball being back in action tomorrow as well. They'll take on UCF at home. They haven't played in 11 days since that series against Oklahoma. Of course, all three games against Iowa State ended up being canceled. They were hoping to get in a doubleheader on Saturday and not expecting to play Sunday, but crossing their fingers. None of it worked out, so they'll have had some time off before they welcome in the Knights, who they're coming off being swept by the second-ranked Texas Longhorns. They're 2-7, but I would venture to guess, with you sitting at a 2-4 record, them sitting at a 2-7 conference record, neither team has quite figured out what they're going to be yet in conference play. I like your chances and good opportunity to get some conference wins since you missed out on that series against the Cyclones. Should be a fun one this weekend. Again, that'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, just like baseball, with it being Easter weekend. Kyron Lindsey for Red Raider basketball entered the transfer portal yesterday. I don't think very surprising to anyone. I would say the more surprising, and not just like floored, but the more surprising news wasn't expecting to see today is you've seen a change in staff for Red Raider basketball. It's Dave Smart. Of course, he came from Canada. All the wins that he came with, all the success up there at Carleton University, comes here for a year, makes an impact on the staff, and now he'll be headed to be the head coach at Pacific. So congrats to him. You know, well wishes and hoping that he tears it up over in the West Coast Conference. But that is, you know, something wasn't expecting to see today.
Yep, that'll be interesting to see where Coach McCaslin goes for his next assistant, whether that's a promotion from within or if he's out on the trail looking to bring somebody in. But yeah, by all accounts, Dave Smart really impactful on the Red Raider offense this year, which is what sort of what he was brought in to be, you know, an offensive mind, sort of an O coordinator, if you will. And who knows exactly how all that was implemented, but you think about how good they were offensively. Yes, they shot it well, but just how well they managed game, you know, when they were outside.
And managed a roster that was, you know, certainly had its holes.
You bet.
And I wonder what the conversation was, you know, with him as far as, you know, hey, I'm coming down here. I want to be a part of the staff. But, you know, I would say that there would be some honesty if this was the case, but I want to be a head coach.
Oh,
so,
sure.
You know, don't. You know, if things go right, you know, I'm not saying, well, don't expect me here next year, but I'm probably going to take an opportunity. And on the other side, I mean, in the basketball world, when they made this hire, this was like from everybody, A++. I don't know how many times I heard Fran Fraschilla talk about it in broadcasts early on in the season. National guys, like knowing who this guy is. Of course, you know, for the bulk of us who aren't paying attention to Canadian basketball, and you know the in-depth circuit up there, we're learning about this guy and learning about all the skins that were on the wall. But you would think on the Texas Tech side, on Grant McCaslin's side, that this would have been some sort of expectation if that is something that he noted he wanted to do. Like, I want to be on the staff, but I want to be a head coach, you know, in the States at a college, and happens after year one. And again, I think that that is, for the most part, the moves that he's made on the staff, going back to year one, this is a nod to the credit for them, because he's hired some outstanding guys that certainly helped immediately turn around the mess that was last year.
Yep, no doubt, and an ascending program that attracts good assistants and spins off good assistants to head coaching jobs. The other little news nugget Parker Mashinsky will be on the opening day roster for the Houston Astros. So three Red Raiders on opening day rosters. Of course, we gave the Clayton Beter news with the Yankees earlier this week, and then obviously Josh Young. Jace Young will start the year in AAA. Toledo Mudhen in the Tigers organization. So he's knocking on the door.
It's Tech Talk here on Double T 97.3. We'll get some of your thoughts off the H. Florence Center chat line when we come back.
This has been the Tech Talk podcast, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction. Check out our library of Double T 97.3 podcasts at Double T 97.3.com.